Veterans salutes those who served. Veterans Ride Free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of COTA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use COTA Plus. Veterans Ride Free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on COTA. Plan your ride and learn more at coda.com/trip planner.
Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the weekly podcast, and on the other line is Todd Rosiak. He is the Brewers beat reporter for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It was another really bad week overall for the Milwaukee Brewers. Really not a bad week. A bad weekend, I would say. Losing the first two games of a three-game series against the Chicago Cubs. It's supposed to be one of the teams they're beating up on. They lose two winnable one-run games, blow a lot of leads on Saturday. And they do salvage the series and come away from the week with an okay mark. You know, they split four games with the Dodgers, so they wind up with a fairly survivable 3-4 mark. But the Brewers falling well behind the St. Louis Cardinals in the National League Central. The Cardinals refuse to lose again. They are beating up on bad teams. Brewers not so much. So Todd, we'll talk about all that. But I actually kind of want to start here as we record on Sunday night with something that's kind of been percolating out here just tonight on Sunday. Adam McAlvey at MLB.com. He caught up with Eric Lauer, who's scheduled to open this three-game series in Los Angeles against the Dodgers on Monday, late night West Coast baseball. And he had some interesting things to say. He, I think, reiterated some of what we maybe heard from Devin Williams right after the trade deadline intuited that the front office and the Brewers, the players and some of the staff weren't on the same page with sort of the philosophy. Lauer intimating that they're looking ahead rather than focusing on this team. He kind of took a jab at the bites of the apple comment that's been circulating about that David Stern said and talking about his philosophy. We'll talk about Josh Hader too in a minute. That trade continues to kind of take some interesting turns, but from what you know of this clubhouse, do you feel like there is a communication issue when it comes to this big picture stuff? And it's all top of mind because the Brewers have struggled, and that's why we're even talking about this. But do you feel like this is something that maybe there has been evidence of this in the past, or is this totally out of the blue, unexpected for you?
I don't know. I don't. You know, obviously we're not in there a ton. We're in there more than, most people, obviously, than all people. But, the vibe, I don't feel any kind of different vibe at all. I would say, you know, Kurt would have been a good person to ask this question since he was in Pittsburgh over the trade deadline. And I think for sure then, you know, based on the weird video from Devin Williams and, there was shock value there coming out of the trade deadline, just because of the trade of Hader and fairly unexpected. You're trading your best relief pitcher, one of your best players. But I would think that would kind of dissipate over time. I feel like it has. You know, maybe this is something that Lauer has, you know, he feels it's more amplified with him. We were talking off air here. Eric Lauer is a guy that's not afraid to speak his mind in the least, and he has some interesting takes on things for sure. We all talk to Brewer players and walk around the clubhouse, talk to them fairly regularly in a good cross section of them. And I don't, in the last week or so, I haven't felt any sort of, bitterness or animosity or anything like that, anything off kilter since the trade. So it's interesting that he brings that up and he mentions it. Reading the comments, David Stearns was very clear from the moment that trade happened that he let the players and the coaching staff know, lines were open, lines of communication were open. If you have a question, if you have a concern, I'm here. Please talk to me. And that continued. And I'm sure that continues to this day. So, you know, David Stearns has a job to do. Players have a job to do. David Stearns' job is to keep this team viable not only this season, but in the long term. And it's clear he has his marching orders, which is no rebuild. So you have to kind of play both sides of the fence in that regard. And some players like Eric Lauer, I guess, don't necessarily agree with that, but they're also employees and they also have a job to do, which is win the games in front of them and win this season. And you worry about that other stuff later. So probably not the greatest timing coming off this series. The Brewers did win on Sunday, which gives them a little bit of a boost going into a huge series in LA now. But timing-wise and unity-wise and all that other kind of stuff, maybe not the greatest time to make these sorts of comments in public. And that's not to criticize Eric Lauer, because, you know, again, as we were talking about off air, the guy, I love his openness and his honesty, but this might get him in a little bit of hot water with the front office and or the coaching staff.
Yeah, and certainly one of the aspects to this is Josh Hader struggling as much as he has. He had two really bad outings for San Diego this past week. The Padres, you know, I'm sure a lot of Brewers fans, plenty of consternation that the Brewers were only able to take one of three against the Cubs. Well, the Padres were at home facing the worst team in the National League in the Washington Nationals, and they dropped the first two games of a four-game series with Josh Hader in the middle of it. Josh Hader was not good, and we've talked about this, but the front office can't come into the clubhouse and say, if this is their assessment, we think Josh Hader isn't going to get better. We think this July is really real. We don't know how to fix this. So we need to trade him now because it's only going to get worse. You can't say that to the clubhouse. You can't say it to the fans. You can't really say it to many people at all. You just kind of have to quietly have that assessment and maybe hope this trade works out. So that's one aspect of it that I think of when we think about this. And certainly as Brewers fans are still trying to digest this trade, seeing Josh Hader struggle is sort of a new element to this whole thing. Like, you know, maybe they did know what they were doing. But at the same time, they didn't add any offense. And that's really what I think is still the inconsistency of that offense is still something that's really, really haunting this team. Even in games where they, I think, score a lot of runs, it's haunting them. So that's something. One storyline, I want to get your take on this. I think I know what you'd say, but one storyline would be maybe David Stearns of the Brewers front office recognized that this season was a long shot, that they didn't have the pieces they needed to make a deep run in the playoffs. And even if they made the playoffs, they were facing maybe something similar to what they saw last year when they weren't able to score anything against the Braves. I do not believe that's the case. I think that if they believe they get in the playoffs, their shot is as good as anybody. But is it possible that they saw that and thought, we don't want to be too aggressive. We don't want to give up anybody on the farm. We can even take a step back with one of our top star players because we don't think he's going to get any better, and we can look to the future. How would you respond if somebody were to ask that question?
Well, I mean, again, I think that falls into the category of things that are maybe true, but you can't come out and say clearly. Within the confines of the front office and at the highest levels of conversation, you know darn well there's conversations going on. You know, how do we stack up against the rest of the National League? Where do we fall in the upper echelon of teams? And you just look at the Dodgers, you look at what the Mets have done, you know, those two teams in particular. You know, it looks like they're loaded for the end. You know, the Cardinals obviously have been playing their butts off in the month of August. Does this team, in their own internal conversations, does it measure up as a World Series caliber team? You know, I think pretty much anybody could say, anybody who's watched this team and from the outside looking in would say probably no. Now, again, like you said, it's the whole mantra of just get in and see what happens. We've seen teams catch fire and, you know, go on incredible runs and get to the World Series, potentially win it. But this offense has shown over the course of a long season to this point that more often than not, its inconsistency is going to come back to haunt the team at some point. Just too homer reliant. Struggles too much to manufacture runs. And, you know, with the injuries, the pitching has been a little spotty at times. It's just everything together. It doesn't feel like, you know, this is a team that you would point to like in 2018 and say like, yeah, this team really does have a chance to go all the way. So with that being said, do you want to mortgage your future, keeping in mind that you do have that philosophy of wanting to take continual bites of the apple and trade some of these prospects for rental guys, you know, in their mindset, I would imagine the answer is no. So you do what you can in the short term. You trade Josh Hader with his trade value at its highest that it's going to be. And you pick up some pieces for the future that you hope are going to help you continue to contend. And maybe in a year, maybe in, you know, 2 years, depending what goes on, maybe you do put together a core of a team that does feel like it has that, you know, true World Series aspirations like in 2018. So I know it's something that, you know, fans argue about, and some people are on board with the idea of just mortgage everything when you have this pitching staff and do what you can to get to the World Series and let the chips fall where they may after. And then there's the other set of fans that says, well, we don't really want to do that. It's more fun being competitive and seeing what happens continually each year. I can see both sides of the argument. You know, I don't really fall on one or the other. But, you know, the Brewers obviously are in the business of selling tickets too. And I'm sure they've noticed what's happened in places like Cincinnati where, you know, apathy is set in. We all know about Pittsburgh. You know, fans just, they can't stand the ownership. They don't go to games. They're tired of the continual rebuilding. You know, the Brewers don't want to do that. You know, they want a consistent group of competitive players. They want consistency in their attendance. So, you know, from my vantage point, I understand the approach. You know, you can agree with it. Some people don't agree with it. It's just kind of the way it is. But it certainly makes for interesting conversation. That's for sure. These are things I never thought we'd be talking about at this point in the season. If you would have told me a month ago, 2 months ago, spring training, that's for sure.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. Again, I'll reiterate, I think on track to being the most disappointing season we've known watching Brewers baseball, given the expectations, given the way the division was supposed to struggle, and they have. Cardinals are better than I think a lot of people thought they'd be, but still, you've got three very bad teams in this division that are, you know, not competitive this year. The fact that we've expanded the playoff field to three wildcard teams, I think everyone, you know, rightfully thought the Brewers were going to be a playoff team this year. They had all the elements for it, and won 95 games with a pretty similar team last year. And they're not going to win 95 this year, barring a really unforeseen, you know, hot streak that we just haven't seen from them. And I think people are going to remember this Josh Hader trade as the pivot point. And I mean, a lot of pressure on these two prospects, Robert Gasser and Esturi Ruiz, to really wind up, they'll be attached to that trade, through no fault of their own, but they will be attached to that for a while. And it'd be interesting to see how that shakes out for them and if they ever have a chance to talk about it and what that means to them. Of course, Josh Hader's struggles are one of the reasons the Padres are still not running away with a playoff spot. And right now, as of Sunday night, the Brewers are 1.5 game out of the nearest playoff spot, but it's not San Diego. It's Philadelphia now that has dropped into that third wild card spot with San Diego a half game ahead. Those are two catchable teams, even though I think this is a week where I really sort of said to myself, okay, I don't think they can win the division now. I think that the Cardinals just got too hot, pulled away. I don't know if the Brewers can make that ground up. But it's also fair to note that their odds, the Brewers' playoff odds, according to Fangraphs, take them for however you want them. You know, they still have the Brewers at just below 50% chance of making the playoffs. They were six games out of the division on August 28th, 2018, when they came back to get the Cubs. It took a crazy September. I'm not saying that I think that they can replicate that again. But they've been down before where I think it was a 15% chance, according to Fangraphs, late in August of 2019 when they ended up, of course, getting to the wild card game. They're still in this, you know, and I don't feel any optimism in my heart for this team right now, but you cannot deny that they are still in this. They don't have any tiebreakers, but there's a really good chance this team could still go to the playoffs. I don't think they're going to the playoffs at this point, but how do you feel about it? Is it still... How real is it that they could still put something together, get a little hot, and wind up going to the playoffs anyway after all of this?
I totally agree with that statement. I just had this discussion with someone earlier this evening. There's still a lot of baseball left to play. I think at this point the third wild card is the more likely scenario, but crazier things have happened. And the Brewers have a ton of home games in the month of September. You know, of all years where you'd like your schedule to be backloaded, I guess this would be the season where you kind of need to to gain ground, and you need that home court advantage, that home field advantage. It couldn't be lined up more perfectly for the Brewers at this point. So, you've got things working in your favor. You've got injured guys coming back. I don't necessarily think that the two players that you would call up on September 1st, they're going to be, difference makers or world beaters or anything like that. But you've got some guys that are finally starting to heat up at the plate a little bit. Andrew McCutchen, Keston Hira. We've seen Craig Counsell's mastery of the bullpen. And this team just has, over the course of the last 5 years, tended to play really well in the month of September. So, you could throw perhaps Trevor Rosenthal into that mix if he's able to stay healthy and continue on this rehabilitation path here in the minor leagues. And that gives Craig Counsell another piece to work with in that bullpen. So, definitely a lot of baseball left to be played. I understand the pessimism because going from splitting a series against one of the best teams in the majors, arguably the best team in the majors, the Dodgers, to losing the first two in just brutal fashion at Wrigley Field, I totally get that. But this is just kind of a next day, flip the calendar sport, and we'll see what happens in LA. If somehow they're able to win two or three out there, you come back with a 500 road trip record. You can live with that, and then you try to make hay here in this next homestand. So it's definitely possible. It's definitely within the realm of possibility, and I think it's still far too early for people to give up hope on this team.
Even if they take one of three, I think you have to say 3 out of 7 against the Dodgers, easily the best team in the NL. That's quality. Like you can't be mad about that. And then, like you said, the schedule gets really light now. You could easily point out the schedule's been light and they haven't made hay against it. 3 and 11 versus those bottom three teams in the NL Central going back into July over the last 14 meetings. 9 of those games were at home. They had leads in 10 of the 11 losses and multiple run leads in 6 of 11. It's crazy to try and wrap your mind around it that they just haven't been able to put away those teams. But, what is it? Of their last 11 losses, they've been by 20 runs. I mean, I realize that that doesn't look good, but it also tells me the team is, they're just right there. Like, that's what's so frustrating about this one. Like, they're not getting manhandled. They could easily have flipped a couple of those to wins and completely changed the landscape of what we're looking at here. So I do feel like it's in there, like a run of success where maybe like April and May, they start getting those opportune moments come through for them. Like, I feel like it's in there. They're not far off, even though they're losing opportunities against some lesser teams. One of the areas that I think they probably could still stand to upgrade is center field. Tyrone Taylor has really struggled in the latter part of this year. Now, he did make another kind of nice defensive play. Didn't make a catch, but saved a run against the Dodgers earlier this week. But he offensively, it hasn't really been there for him this year. He's pretty below average. And the one spot still in this roster that you could say is a below average spot is center field. Jonathan Davis as a backup is more of a, he's a backup and a quality defensive player, but not somebody you're going to rely on offensively. And then you look at AAA and Sal Frelick is tearing it up and he's not on the 40-man roster. And I there might be some reason involving the rookie of the year eligibility why they're not bringing him up yet, but that day is coming soon where they can. I don't know. I'm kind of surprised they haven't made this move already. Obviously, the kid has barely played in the minors. He's a first-round draft pick last year, but he has not been daunted by any level of baseball at this point. Are you surprised? A guy who could supposedly play pretty credible defensively in center field, they haven't at least given it a shot, bringing in, maybe it's Ruiz instead, but giving one of those kids a chance in center field.
I wouldn't say I'm surprised. The Brewers have tended to be fairly, while they like to push their prospects in the minor leagues, they've been fairly conservative when it comes to actually calling them up and throwing them into the fire in the majors. And I get that because you don't want to, throw a roadblock necessarily in front of them or, get them off track mentally. But if anybody in recent years has really merited a call up, because of what he's been doing in the minor leagues, it's Sal Frelick. He's been incredible. He's hit at every level, by all accounts. He's been a very good defensive player. They can play him in center. I know a few podcasts ago I was talking about him and I had mentioned that he looked more like a corner outfielder. I was mistaken. he is a center fielder from everything that I've been able to gather and people that I've talked to and everything. They do see him as a center fielder at the highest level. And, you know, maybe you can figure out a way, bring him up, plug him in as a lefty righty platoon guy for in center, and, you know, move on past Jonathan Davis, who's had his moments as a defender, but certainly has not been hitting the ball well at all, and see what he can do. You know, like you said, service time is always a consideration with this team, especially. But at some point, you know, maybe he's a guy who can come in and provide a little bit of a spark and provide a little bit of a fun story for a team that really in recent weeks has been lacking in that department dramatically. So, you know, I don't know necessarily that's going to happen, but I think definitely an argument can be made. And, you know, Esteri Ruiz is another possibility as well. From what I've seen, he's been playing okay down in Nashville too. It's just nice to be able to have these discussions where they do have a couple of guys now that potentially could come up and maybe, you know, become factors in some way, shape or form for the major league team.
Yeah. I mean, seeing these comments that we've talked about from Lauer or Williams, you know, they just need that something, that spark. Maybe it is an addition, and maybe that comes with September when the rosters expand a little slightly. You know, I mentioned there's this consideration where you have to be eligible for the rookie of the year. You have to, you can't have played 45 days the previous year. We haven't gotten to the point where we're below 45 days this season. And the reason they would want to wait, rookie of the year sounds like something superfluous, but there is under the new CBA some draft compensation baked in there for teams that bring players up at the beginning of the year, and those guys wind up in the rookie of the year top two of the voting, I believe. The team could get compensated for that with a draft pick. The player gets a full service year time. It's still a little complicated, but I think it's possible that in the next, you know, 7 days, they might realistically be looking at that. And that maybe that gives them the shot in the arm, the sort of emotional shot in the arm that this team could use. Another guy I wanted to ask you about is Aaron Ashby. We talked about him on I think the last podcast even. He had another rough one. And I feel like Aaron Ashby is, this is just anecdotal, but it feels like when he's at his absolute best, the offense does nothing for him. And then when he's struggling, the offense just isn't keeping pace. That certainly was the case in Chicago in a slugfest, 8-7. Ashby had some great strikeout stuff. He looked really good at some at-bats and some pitches. And then in others, the guy just was hittable. And two strike pitches again got him. And then he winds up in a situation where the Brewers lose yet another of his starts. I think it's 11 of the last 12. Those are not all on him. But I just don't know what to make of him. Like, I think they should keep him in the rotation, which is their plan to do it. I don't think there's a better option right now that I would necessarily advocate for. I still think his destiny is being a lights out reliever. But obviously the Brewers want to, you know, make sure that he's not going to be a great starter first, because that was obviously where the value is. Just give me your thoughts on seeing him pitch again, where you're at with Aaron Ashby.
The more he trots out to the mound with each successive start, the more my mind goes back to Corbin Burns 2019.
Definitely.
You know, obviously it's not, you know, a total it's not a total comparison there, totally accurate comparison, but just in terms of the lack of success, the struggles, you know what's in there. Yeah, you know, the Brewers believe in him based off of what they, you know, what they gave him in that extension. But for several reasons, things are just not going according to plan with him. And every time he takes the mound, you just feel you know, and the record speaks to this too, is you just feel it's going to be a hard time. The Brewers are going to have a hard time winning that day. And we keep hearing this discussion and this narrative of competitive misses with Aaron Ashby. That's what Craig Collins likes to talk about a lot. And it's basically just saying that, you know, he can throw strikes, but when he doesn't throw strikes, his balls are just so far off that the hitters are not enticed to swing. So they're just going to sit and wait for anything that comes over the plate, or they're going to take their walks. And we've seen that recipe just has not worked for Aaron Ashby. And I think there's a part, that a mental part, that plays to this as well. You know, as a young guy, I'm sure he's struggling with confidence issues right now. And, you know, it's the first time in his baseball career, he's, he's faced, extended struggles. Everybody goes through that stuff. And now it's incumbent upon him. It's incumbent on the Brewers to help him figure that out, move him to that next level. And you're right. At this point, I don't really see any other internal options or any other obvious avenues, to try to strengthen that spot. Adrian Hauser, whenever he's able to come back, you plug him back in, then you've got the five original guys, and you hope for the best with that. But in the meantime, I think you just got to roll with him. You got to keep working with him and hope that somehow he flips the switch and finds that control and finds that confidence that's brought him to this point and helped earn him that extension.
I definitely love that Burns comparison. I mean, he was a guy with a plus pitch, a really good plus pitch. They took Burns, a guy who couldn't figure it out in 2019, and put him in that pitching lab, and suddenly he was a Cy Young contender in 2020, a Cy Young winner in 2021, and now he's a surefire six innings of one run or less baseball, and the Brewers are as good at this as anybody. So they like what they saw with him to sign him to that contract, and I have a feeling we're going to see some really good stuff down the road from him, maybe as soon as next year. All right, I want to talk a little bit about Christian Yelich. He had a really rough moment on Saturday in the field. He caught a fly ball, lost the ball on the exchange, ended up allowing a tying run to score in extra innings that kept the game going. Otherwise, it would have been two outs with the runner at third in the 10th inning, I believe that was, against Taylor Rogers. And then the Cubs are able to rally back in the 11th and win. The Brewers blow three leads in the 9th, 10th, and 11th of that game. There's a lot more in that game than just the Yelich error or misplay. I don't know if it was officially an error. But it highlights for me something that we've seen over the course of the year. Defensively, Christian Yelich he's really struggled. And it's not so much running down the ball. He could still go get a ball every now and again, but it's not graceful necessarily out there for someone as athletic as he is. And then the throwing arm just isn't there. We're talking kind of Chris Davis level throwing arm coming from left field. And that's something that I think has gotten worse since he's been here. Although I guess I don't have a ton of data in my head to suggest one way or the other, but I've been thinking about this it feels like over the next few years, to look ahead a little bit, they're going to have a hard time keeping him on in the field. He's going to be more of a DH type guy. And that's going to handicap them a little bit. I think the Brewers, we'll talk about this more at the end of the season, but I think signing Andrew McCutchen, by the way, had a great week. It put him in a little bit of a box with the designated hitter position. They kind of have to have McCutchen, unless he's willing to give the outfield a try. They kind of have to have him be the guy in that spot. And we'll talk about Keston here in a second. It keeps him from getting more opportunities. And Yelich down the road, I just don't imagine that he's going to be a left fielder for much longer if this continues to depreciate a little bit. So as you look forward, I mean, I guess I don't have a good question. I realize they're not going to like move him with the contract he has or try to move on from him next year or anything. But it's concerning to me because the Brewers need him to play in the outfield, Christian Yelich. And I'm not sure what I'm seeing suggests that's a guy who's going to be able to do that down the line. How do you see him defensively?
Yeah, I mean, this year I think it is what it is. I keep using this term, but you roll with it. You hope for the best. For the most part, you feel confident in him tracking fly balls, running stuff down. He can still move, as we see him running the bases tremendously when he gets on base. But the arm definitely is a factor. It's a negative, and you see teams' scouting reports say as much. I mean, take the extra base and then some against him, and usually it pays off. So, you roll out this year, roll out the rest of the year with him there, and then you kind of reassess in the off season with all these young bucks coming up from the minor leagues. You know, maybe Christian Yelich becomes primarily a DH starting as early as next year, or at least a part-time DH splitting his time. I think that's definitely a possibility. And you go that route, because as you noted, you're not going to be able to move him in a trade. You have to work with him. You have to try to make the most of what you have, regardless of whether that's up to fans' expectations or not. And just try to figure out as Craig Counsell said earlier this season, I love that quote, you have to find a new excellence, a new route to excellence. You have to figure out a way to become the best at, the new thing that you are, and that being a leadoff hitter. hope that you can continue to at least be productive in that role and, keep that on base percentage up around 400. Maybe start hitting the ball in the air a little bit more, but first things first, I think you just gotta hope for the best. Hope he doesn't hurt you in too many more games this season. Hope he can find a little bit of lightning in a bottle. Who knows? Maybe he'll hit for the cycle again. And
That was the beginning of the end, man.
And go from there. And then again, you kind of reassess in the off season and figure in some potential other moves and just try to figure out where he fits in at that point.
Yelich, I believe it was an 0 for 26 that he snapped when he homered earlier in the week. It's continuing to be a challenging season, and I think, I mean, certainly most of us, I think, are here at this point. He's just not going to be the guy that they signed to that contract, the guy they were hoping for. And so they're going to have to find ways to, like you said, get value out of it. I don't know if even as a DH, it's best value there at all. And with all those kids coming up, like they're going to need the spots. They're going to need room to play. So it's going to be a challenge going forward with Christian Yelich, and I'm sure that'll be something we're talking about deep into the offseason. Real quickly before we get to three up, three down, I did want to ask about Keston Hira. He has the two homer game on Sunday. One of the most popular topics of Brewers Twitter is why he doesn't play more. We've mentioned this before. The guy defensively, speaking of guys who struggle in the field, really can only play first base, I would say. I mean, second base possibly, but he's pretty much a first baseman or DH. And if you're playing him in one of those two spots, it means Rowdy Tellez or Andrew McCutchen are not in the lineup. And the Brewers like those guys, whether or not the stats or the fans feel one way or the other, that's just what the Brewers prefer. So unless Andrew McCutchen is going to play center field, you're not going to see a lot of opportunities there. But Craig Counsell did kind of indicate they got to give it a shot. They got to find him a way to get him into games. He is they're one of their more productive offensive players, even though he swings and misses as much as literally any player in the big leagues. No one has swung and missed more than Keston Hira among players with his volume of at bats this season. And even if you just go back to July, he's still one of the top 30 guys, bottom 30 guys when it comes to swing and miss. So that's still an issue. But what you see from Keston here, I feel like, Todd, I feel like that I understand where the Brewers are here. Like they have to find a spot for him. They have to get him in the game more often. He has come through in the clutch. They just don't have enough offense. They need him, it seems like, right?
Yeah, I do like the discussion of playing McCutchen more in center. I know that's something that they didn't anticipate necessarily when they signed him, but the way the season has played out, the struggles that Tyrone Taylor has had, I think that's probably the easiest route to getting Keston Hira into the lineup more consistently, and it would not surprise me in the least if that's ultimately the route that they go. I think one of the positive things with Keston Hira, the swing and miss, but he is showing more productivity against left-handers, which is big. And if you can roll him out there more days than not and get him on a little bit of a hot streak, he's proven to be a guy that can carry the offense for spells at times. And with an offense like this that has been struggling for consistency, you have to jump on whatever guy is showing a little bit of a spark. And for right now, that's him. So, Craig Counsell doesn't necessarily like the lineup questions and everything, but I think that's going to be an interesting one that will be asked in Los Angeles here in the next few days. And as we look at the lineups as they're rolled out, will McCutchen be in center? And to me, I think McCutchen has looked fine in the limited amount of time he's played in center.
Totally
Is
agree.
his throwing arm tremendous? No, not really. But either is Jonathan Davis's. Andrew McCutchen, as we talked about earlier this season, he's a physical marvel. That guy can still fly out there. He's a former Gold Glove outfielder. He can play out there, and playing him a little bit more out there is not. I don't think really going to hurt them at all. So do what you can, get Keston's bat in the lineup and see if he can continue to catch this lightning in a bottle and maybe carry the unit for a little bit.
I completely agree with you. We haven't seen Andrew McCutchen struggle out there. And granted, the opportunities may not be many, but he hasn't. There aren't many balls where I'm like, well, if Andrew McCutchen weren't playing there, somebody else would have gotten to that. I don't know if we're going to be saying that hardly at all. Maybe once or twice, but at this point, I think for the offense, it might be worth it to give that a shot. Okay, moving into some of the more granular details from this week, we move to three up, three down. Todd, I'll get it started. The best story of the week, I think, had nothing to do with on the field. It was Wednesday again. One of the Dodgers TV reporters, David Vesey, went down the slide, Bernie's slide, and awkwardly went into the padding at the bottom of the slide, broke ribs, six cracked ribs, and then also broke two bones in his wrist. It made for, I know this sounds crazy for people who are somehow not aware of this, a hilarious made-for-TV moment when he was introduced. They showed the footage on the Dodgers broadcast. Then they introduced him in the stands, and he had a cast all up and down his arm. At that point, you don't realize that it's as bad as it was. A big bummer. Like, you know, I don't want to be laughing about it because that stinks. That slide goes very fast. I don't know if you've ever gone down it, but a wild moment. Played for laughs, you know, everybody kind of seemed to be in good spirits about it, which is good, but he's got some recovery ahead of him. Apparently Bernie's slide is a little more dangerous than we thought, Todd.
I will say I've had opportunities to go down it. I haven't taken advantage of them yet, and I'm thinking maybe the Brewers now will be a little bit even more hesitant to allow people to go down that slide. I know typically you have to sign a waiver, and I'm sure David did that before he took his little tumble down the slide. I do know also in the visiting clubhouse at American Family Field, there's a big sign on the wall near the door that warns players, staff members, that it is a crime to go down Bernie's slide without permission. So that's not a joke. You know, it's not a laughing matter there. So at some point, I'm sure I will try to go down it. Adam McAlvey did go down it a few weeks ago.
Yeah, just recently.
Skinned up his elbow pretty good, actually, too. It's a lot faster than everybody than he anticipated and probably most people think. So Bernie is an expert. Bernie's a professional, and he's also got that furry suit that he wears too. So, or I don't know if it's furry, but it's felty maybe.
Yeah, certainly something that's softening the blow.
Yeah, cushions a little bit too, and I feel bad for David. That's a tough way to go out. Had to have been difficult trying to get dressed. You know, I think of all the logistics there. You're on the road. You know, best wishes to him and his recovery, because I know he got a lot of airtime because of that and a lot of pub. I would be willing to guess that he would trade all that in a minute to have a healthy, functioning arm at this point.
Yeah. All right. What do you got for three up, three down?
Although I was not in the friendly confines of Wrigley Field yet again, boohoo, I was marveling last night at the home run by Hunter Renfro, the one off the scoreboard there and left. I'm sure most Brewer fans have probably been down there before, but if you haven't, that's a poke, that's a blast, and that definitely is one of the more impressive homers we have seen a Brewer hit so far this season. So that's a guy that's got easy power, as we know. He's hit them in bunches, as we've seen. And he's got such weird numbers now. Was that number, correct me if I'm wrong, is that number 21 for him on the season or 22? You know, the RBI total is not there, you know, comparatively speaking to the number of home runs he's hit. But you take the injuries that he suffered, the two stints on the injured list this season, missed, you know, around 25 games, I want to say, or so, but in that neighborhood, 20 games, makes you wonder where his homer total would be right now if had he remained healthy this whole time. But fun for me, a fun player to watch, and the guy that definitely gets the most out of his swings.
Up to 22 home runs now for Hunter.
22.
And then McCutchen fourth on the team after that with 14, because he had a couple this week in a game, and three in a span of just a few at-bats. So he is now going to encroach on 20 by the end of the season as well. Brewers already now with three players who have 20-plus home runs. I will move to Monday. That was not a good game for the Brewers, 4-0. Not worth mentioning if you're a Brewers fan, but Wisconsin native Gavin Lux, formerly of Kenosha Indian Trail High School, hits a two-run homer in that game, accounting for half of the Dodgers' runs. I thought that was kind of cool. I mean, it's not good if you're a Brewers fan, but Gavin Lux, the first Milwaukee, or I should say first Wisconsin-born player to homer in that park, in Miller Park / American Family Field, since Eric Hinsky back in, shoot, I don't remember now if that's 2014 or 2013, but one of those years, Eric Hinsky, who was a Menasha Blue Jay, had a pretty good big league career with a few teams. He also played for the Toronto Blue Jays in his career, but not a lot of Wisconsin-born players have had a chance to homer in that park. We've had a few Wisconsinites come through lately into the big leagues. It's been a good bumper crop, and Gavin Lux is certainly at the forefront of that. First-round pick by the Dodgers. He is a big part of Los Angeles' success this year, and kind of cool to see a Wisconsin product make good. I think he had four strikeouts the next day when the Brewers won, though. So they got a little bit of kickback out of that, and then were able to win that game. The Brewers were, so everybody came out ahead, I guess.
The game I covered the other day, the thrilling victory against the Dodgers in extra innings there, the Andrew McCutchen, Hunter Renfro connection replaying,
yes.
The instant replay of Major League. I thought that was pretty cool. Renfro going for home and scoring right behind McCutchen. It just made for a cool visual. And, you know, Renfro's quote after the game was pretty funny. He said, one way or the other, I was going to end the game. And, you know, if he would have been thrown out, not necessarily going to end the game, but we know what he meant. It was kind of funny to watch. He showed no hesitation, and he's a guy that, you know, is out there to win for sure. And he plays 100 miles an hour. And that was another example where he did so and paid off for the Brewers for sure.
Some injury news I'll bring up as my third for Three Up, Three Down. Injury news with Jace Peterson going to be out on a rehab assignment soon. He's hoping to be back by the weekend. The series with the Chicago Cubs starting Friday at American Family Field. I in no way am suggesting that Jace Peterson is the reason that they have gone through these struggles lately, but it's notable that he went out right after the All-Star break, and the Brewers have really struggled without him. He's just been such a useful utility guy. He's not a world beater offensively, but he has done enough, and he's been in some big spots this year for the Brewers and come through for them. So having him over there, very reliable defensively, I think with Mike Brasso and Luis Arias, they've made some really good plays. Actually, I thought this week was very good over at third base, but it is occasionally an adventure. And so with Peterson, things will be shored up quite a bit. So that was really good news for the Brewers. If they can get him back by the weekend, they desperately need him back, I think.
I will just tack on to that one quick. I had a nice discussion with him not too long ago, and he's really been bummed out. He was in the midst of a career year when he hurt himself, and just kind of a fluky thing. And you feel bad for a guy who's spent most of his career trying to gain a foothold in the majors, and here he is really making a difference on a good team. And he goes out to no fault of his own. So here's hoping that he's able to bounce back and doesn't have any complications or any setbacks in his rehab assignment, and is able to come back and provide what he has for the Brewers over the last couple of years, which is just kind of that steady presence no matter where they line him up.
A couple things we did not talk about in Three Up, Three Down: four strikeouts and one inning for the Brewers on Monday. Just one more grace note on a really rough stretch of baseball. That was something you don't see every day. Christian Yelich mentioned earlier that he had his first bomb in forever, a no doubter. On Wednesday, Rowdy Tellez falls into the stands chasing down a foul ball. Really kind of a priceless reaction from the kid in the front row who suddenly had a foul ball and Rowdy Tellez falling in his lap through the netting. That was kind of fun. Mario Feliciano got his first big league hit in that game as well. A guy who debuted last May in 2021, I believe walked in his only plate appearance, scored a run, but then didn't get a chance really to get into a game until just recently. He's now back at AAA with the return of Omar Narvaez, but Feliciano on the board with his first big league hit, which was a single. Tyrone Taylor saved a home run again on Thursday. It didn't end up being a catch, but that was still a pretty impressive play 1 week after he did save and catch a home run. I mentioned Andrew McCutchen's three home runs and as many at-bats as well. So there's a quick look at the week. Let's go now back in time on Remember When.
Red Hot Memories, high school days.
Todd, I was trying to think of moments, because Bernie's slide was kind of one of the big stories of the week, I was trying to think of moments involving the Brewers in-game entertainment, and I landed on one of the more memorable moments in Miller Park / American Family Field history. It's the only event I think a 30 for 30 would be worth writing And that is Sausage Gate back on July 9th, 2003. Yeah. Do you remember, like, what are your memories from that? If I mention that, there are some people now who don't know it. It's long enough ago, 20 plus years ago, 20 years ago, almost. What do you recall from that moment?
I was still far away from covering the team, of course, I always will remember the name Randall Simon, you know, and just that whole scene of them running down the warning track there in front of the dugout and him sticking his bat out and everything. And then just the ridiculousness of he was arrested, right? Like he got arrested for that.
Yeah, he did. It was quite the to-do. He didn't end up going to jail or spending the night in jail or anything like that. But he was led out of the stadium afterwards. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, I mean, just in retrospect, let's just kind of take a step back and realize how ridiculous that is. I mean, I'm, of course, no lawyer, but I'm not sure to the legalities of it. But come on, I mean, it's just a guy goofing around. Was it the best idea? No, but it made for a great story. It's going to be on highlight reel, blooper reels, I should say, for the rest of eternity. And just one of those kind of quirky, funny things that I think people of our age will definitely remember for the rest of our lives.
Yeah, the footage, I find that footage of old events get grainier and grainier with time. They seem so clear in my head, but it seems like they just, as technology improves, everything seems to get worse. But this is July 9th, 2003, and 19-year-old college student named Mandy Block is part of the Brewers Super Team. She is dressed as the Italian sausage in the Sausage Race. Of course, this is one of the early years of Miller Park, and Randall Simon and the Pittsburgh Pirates are playing, and they're watching the sausages who go right by the visiting dugout, go by both dugouts, really, for those who are familiar with it. They can kind of picture how that works. They just kind of come around the lower part of the stadium, the part by the home plate and whatnot. And he, Randall Simon, I remember kind of just like bumped his bat into her. I watched it back again and was surprised. He did take a pretty good swing at the top of this giant foam mascot. The runner falls over. She takes out the hot dog also, who also falls over. Ends up with some scraped knees. Nothing too serious or anything like that. I think she got like a pinky bandaged. You know, it wasn't a big deal. But the Milwaukee County District's Attorney's Office, they review this case. They decide he shouldn't be charged. He does get cited by the Sheriff's Department for disorderly conduct and fined $432. You know, police are involved, like I said, after the game. They decided the injuries just weren't that big a deal. The runners did not want to, like, press charges or anything. They kind of realized it was mostly in good fun. Like you said, kind of an immature thing to do, but still not that big a deal. He's just like, oh, look at this giant foam costume. I'll take a swing at it and see what happens, you know? He was booed, Randall Simon was, when he came to the plate in the seventh inning, though. He did get suspended for 3 games and fined $2,000 by the league. So it did end up being a fair amount of money, I guess.
I didn't remember the suspension. I know. He adds another level to another layer.
It was wild. He issued an apology. Actually, MLB.com did a really good interview with Mandy Block before this season. So she talked about it. She said that she wasn't crazy about how it made it sound, you know, like she never wanted anything bad to happen to him. She never thought that he deserved to be punished or anything.
Yeah.
She didn't want to be in the middle of that. She actually got a signed autographed bat from Randall Simon. And he actually, when Simon came back, as he was traded to the Cubs, and when he came back, he bought Italian sausages for an entire section in the stadium. During the race, his teammates held him back so that he, you know, like, no, stay away, Randall. Which I thought was really very funny. Man, Dusty Baker was guarding the bat rack. And actually, the Curaçao Tourism Department, Randall Simon, very famous in Curaçao, the country of his origin. I believe Andrew Jones is also from Curaçao. Anyway, the agency that represents Curaçao's tourism department offered Mandy Block, she's now Mandy Wagner, a vacation to the island free of charge. So she went, you know, with her mom and got, you know, a pretty nice vacation out of it. And I guess like Simon's on billboards over there and everything. So, he's a big deal. And they didn't want her to feel bad about their guy. So everybody came out ahead. It worked out fine. It was definitely a bizarre moment in time. I myself ran in the sausage race in 2003. I was working in the media relations department when this happened as an intern. So it definitely has a vivid place in my memory banks as well. But, what a time, the sausage gate, whatever you want to call it. One of the last times that the Brewers in-game entertainment made this much headline, like Bernie Sly did this week. All right, that's enough. Let's wrap it up. We'll close it down here with Todd's Take of the Week.
Ryan Braun sends it to the
through Twitter this evening and came across a Bob Nightingale tweet that kind of caught my attention, and I think everybody else probably too that saw this tweet. St. Louis Cardinals sweep the Diamondbacks 6-4 and are 15-3 in August. Their best August winning percentage since 1944. They now have a 5-game lead over the Brewers in the Central. What was the Brewers' lead in the Central at the trade deadline? Wasn't it 3.5 games?
It was either 3 or 3. I think it was just 3, but it had been 3.5 at some point, yes.
Okay. Just, again, you know, we've talked about it ad nauseum, but it, just an incredible turn of events here over the last several weeks. And will be interesting to see if the Cardinals do stumble at some point. You have to think they will. I mean, there's no way they can continue to play, stay this hot and play this well over the long haul, but stranger things have happened, and the Cardinals have proven, as Brewers fans know, that they can put teams away. So I'm sure from the Brewers fan standpoint, they're hoping that there is a little bit of a slide there in the days and weeks to come for the Cardinals, and the Brewers can get back into that Central Division race by hook or by crook.
The Cardinals have won 7 games in a row. They have, like I said, they've been beating up on bad teams the way that you'd like the Brewers presumably to be doing. They just won 6 straight between Colorado and Arizona. They beat the Cubs earlier in August, swept them in St. Louis. They swept the Yankees, which was obviously no slouch, and then took 2 of 3 from the Brewers. They now have 5 games coming up this week against Chicago with a doubleheader in there at Wrigley Field. So right after the Brewers, they're going to go into Chicago, and Brewers fans will be cheering for the Cubs if they care about the standings. Maybe cheering for the Cubs is a bridge too far, but you know, they will be involved there in what's going on. So the Cardinal schedule is so bad going forward. If you know, again, the Brewers haven't done well against a perceptively worse schedule, so you can't really say anything is set in stone. But the Cardinals have just, I think, 29 games remaining against the bottom 3 teams in the NL Central or even in the NL at large. So it's not looking good. And again, they don't have tiebreakers, the Brewers don't, against either Philadelphia or San Diego. There are no game 163, so they have to finish a game ahead of those teams. They cannot finish tied. So that means they're basically 2.5 back of Philly and 3 back of Philadelphia. But that might be the best route in. I think the Cardinals will slow down. I don't know if they're going to slow down enough. You know, 5 games is a pretty healthy lead. Although, like I said, 2018, it was 6, and the Brewers caught the Cubs, and we all know how that went down. So, any last thoughts, Todd? I think we're good, man. We've had a lot to say.
Yeah, let's put a bow on this baby.
All right. Up next here, Kurt Hoag, our colleague, sat down with Mike Brasso, Brewers third baseman. He had a big hit in that Saturday game, a go-ahead hit in extra innings, and is in Chicago, a place where he's been to some games growing up. He's from Northwest Indiana, grew up a Cubs fan. He talks about that. Obviously, he's all Brewers now, but definitely has some Chicago sports connections. Cubs will be coming into town again later this week, so thought it would be a good time to check in with Brasso. He's one of the nicer, easier guys to talk to on this team. He's a really good time and a really has really had a nice season for them. So here is Kurt's interview. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We'll chat with you again next week. Bye-bye.
Here with Mike Brasso. We're going to have a little dugout chat for this Sunday matinee game. Mike, to start, you're from not the area-ish, yep, but not Milwaukee. So did you grew up a Cubs fan, right?
I did, yeah. It was in the family. It was passed down from my old man. So I grew up a Northside fan, yeah.
How many, did you go to lots of games? Or what was the level of fandom, I guess, for you?
Yeah, well, a huge fandom. But obviously, you know, playing baseball growing up in the summer, it's tough to get to some games. But definitely every summer, I would say at least a handful, half dozen actual games that we would go to. So it was a good time.
So it would have been what, like early 2000s ish that, like,
yep,
mid 2000s,
like, yeah.
Who are your favorite players?
I remember watching Derek Lee, okay, Aramis Ramirez. I remember Starlin Castro when he first came up. He was like that 20-year-old rookie sensation. Mm-hmm. I remember that kind of era really well.
And those may not have been the best Brewers. There was a couple of good Brewers teams,
sure,
scattered in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you have any memories of watching specific Brewers teams or players when they rolled through town?
Not too many like crazy memories. I remember Counts' stance. you know, watching that on TV. So that was kind of cool to come full circle. But yeah, mostly it was just you know, supporting the Cubs with my dad and kind of just having that family bonding time together. Yeah.
So take me a little through your baseball journey. Obviously, undrafted. Yeah. What did you feel was played into not getting taken by a team? Like, did you get any reasons?
Yeah, no. For it? It was a really tough time. Honestly, it was probably the moment that, you know, I was lost. I kind of had like all my eggs in one basket as far as baseball, and you know, when it didn't happen, that draft didn't happen on that third day after my senior year, it was kind of like, you know, what do I do now? But yeah, I think a lot of it had to do with, you know, kind of a northern team, you know, right outside Detroit, kind of not the greatest weather. You know, it was tough for, you know, scouts, I guess, maybe to come by and see, like, you know, potentially one, you know, mid-20s rounder. So, you know, it was what it was. It was a dark 48 hours after that draft, and then, you know, luckily I got the call to come play some pro ball down in Tampa. So it all worked out.
Did you? I mean, is that a higher pressure situation? You feel like being an undrafted guy when you start out, because, like, you know, one bad month and all of a sudden you might very well that might be the end of your baseball career.
Yeah, definitely. You know, your rope is definitely shorter. You know, when they don't have as much invested in you as a non-drafted free agent. So yeah, I mean, it's not so much I guess more pressure. It's just, you know, that you don't have the, you know, the opportunity to make as many mistakes as some other players might have. Yeah.
Did that kind of shape your just the way you approach the game and like your development and
at all? I think so. Yeah, I mean, I think it helped me become a little bit more versatile in the field. I think I was kind of, you know, growing up as a shortstop only, and all the way through college is pretty much the only glove in my bag. And then, you know, when I got that, you know, free agent call to kind of be a filler, for lack of better words, a roster filler down in the GCL, you know, I learned really quickly to kind of pick up, you know, more gloves, because that was the only way I was going to be able to get on the field. So I think that, and yeah, kind of just like what do you have to lose mentality, I think kind of helped me push through the ranks, I guess, fairly quickly. Yeah.
What did you know about Milwaukee when you got the call?
I knew they had good cheese. No, Milwaukee, honestly, I am disappointed in myself for not knowing as much as what I've learned so far this summer. This summer has been absolutely, I mean, they have amazing events. It seems like nearly every weekend here. Seems like a pretty awesome summer city. I don't know about when it gets cold. I got that feeling, you know, kind of similar to Northwest Indiana where I grew up. So I'm not too far away from, you know, knowing what that feels like. But definitely an awesome summer city. Yeah.
You a Bears fan?
I am.
And Bulls?
And Bulls, yes.
What are your thoughts on the Bears this season?
Going to have some work to do. You know, I honestly, as much as I say I'm a Bears fan, I think I've been to one game in my life. It was one of those things that we never really went to as a family, and I never really got into it, you know, recently. So I consider myself a Bears fan, more of a fantasy fan, just a fan of good football in general.
A fantasy fan. Okay.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I am too now with football. It's like, if I didn't play fantasy, I don't know if I would be like as outside of like watching the Packers.
For
like,
sure.
Are you like, What leagues are you in? Have you won recently? Are you good?
I could be better. There's a couple leagues with some guys around the league. I think I actually just missed the cutoff in our league at this team, which is, I got to talk to some people about that. Maybe I'll double up with somebody and split a team. But, yeah, definitely looking forward to another fantasy season.
So you haven't gotten the invite to the high stakes Tommy Pham?
I have. I'm still on that waiting list.
So, okay, so you in Tampa Bay, one teammate, obviously a lot of teammates that come through Tampa, and honestly a lot of them seem to come here. One of them that kind of took a reverse path from Milwaukee to Tampa, Brent Phillips.
Yeah.
Loved by the fans here. Didn't spend a ton of time in Milwaukee, actually, but I guess that kind of just speaks to his personality. The question I have for you is, who's the better dancer between you and Brett?
You know what? As much as I have, I guess, confidence in my own abilities, I've seen him pull some moves that I just simply can't. So I'm going to have to give him the torch on that, simply based on the backflips. I can't do
the
backflips.
Okay.
He can do a pretty sweet backflip, and then he busts his own personality on it. And it turns out good more times than not. So I'll give that one to Philly.
What's your go-to move though? Like you can bust a move in the clubhouse every now and then.
I got a signature couple moves. I started busting out the moonwalk the other day as a little sentiment to a little Michael Jackson era coming from where I grew up. But I don't know. I got a couple of signature moves. Can't do a backflip though, man. See somebody do a backflip on a dance floor. There's no teaching you can do to do a backflip. Yeah, the crowd goes wild every single time. There's no such thing as a bad backflip unless you just don't land it.
Yeah.
Right? Which is bad.
Then it's funny. So
then it's funny. Way, yeah, so it's a win-win.
Then you get the points for that. So
it's a win-win.
Like, I don't know. Like, have you always been where does this dancing come from? Have you always been just like a kind of got like natural rhythm, good moves?
I guess. I don't know. I'm a big. Always growing up liking weddings. I think I got on the wedding dance floor at a young age and just rolled with it. Yeah.
We've talked about, you know, actual baseball things. We've mm-hmm. talked about hitting lefties, hitting righties, and you've said deep down in your heart of hearts you think you can hit righties just as well. How nice was it in Pittsburgh to take a righty beat?
Yeah. No, it was always felt good to kind of put a barrel on a ball, but I obviously you hear the stigma of like, you know, lefty only hits lefties and hits lefties well, but you know, at the same time, I grew up, you know, hitting righties, a lot of righties through minor league ball, so it's nothing that I haven't done before. It's just I think one of those things that like somewhere along the line put a label on me as far as that, and I guess the numbers kind of rolled with it, but at the same time, you know, anytime I step in the box, I feel comfortable with it, and I know my opportunities right now, especially for this team, are, you know, my role is going to be more of, you know, lefty on the mound, you know, go do some damage in the box, which is all well and fine because I'm confident in that. But at the same time, you know, I want them to also feel comfortable and everybody else to feel comfortable if there is a right-handed thrower on the mound that, I'll be able to do my job as well.
How do you go about that preparation when you know that your role on this team is you're going to hit a lot of lefties, but you want to stay ready to the opportunities too.
Yeah, definitely. I think more of it is the homework that goes on to the lefties on the staff. You know, pre-series and pre-game, even during the game. If I'm not starting, they got one or two lefties that might be available in the pen. You know, I'll watch some film and see how they attack hitters. But, with that mentality and that role, I guess, like you said, it's kind of easier for me to tunnel in on, you know, certain guys. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, you know, I'm still trying to watch as much film as possible and you know, pick up on tendencies and what's their out pitches and, you know, just being as prepared as possible when I step in that box.
Would you, this is way down the road, but, like, when your playing career is done, would you be interested in coaching, managing anything like that? Like, just the way you kind of, it seems like you view the game is sort of like a step ahead, I don't want to say analytical, but, you know, kind of that the thought through it approach.
Yeah, I think so. I haven't thought about it too much because I want to stay in the moment, but I definitely thought about, you know, later down the line. I think that would be something that I would be interested in, some kind of role as far as, you know, just staying in the game. It's like I said earlier when I was coming out of college, I had all my eggs in one basket, right? I only know baseball and really I've only invested time into baseball, which is, it is what it is. It may sound, you know, very one way, but you like what you like, right? So I guess, I think I'd like to stay in the game as much as possible and, you know, hopefully when I'm done playing, which hopefully is a long ways down the road, but at the same time, when that time comes, because it comes for everybody, then, I'll hopefully find a way in some capacity still in the game, yeah.
So you're saying when you were in college, you weren't there for the academics. You were there to play baseball. Yeah, is that what I'm getting?
Yeah, I think so. I did my thing. I participated in class and I pulled good enough grades to keep me on the field, was important. And it was one of those things where, you know, immediately from class I'd be looking forward to practice. Yeah. Even during class, you know, like what can we do to be better as a team and what could I do better? So it's always on my mind. And you know, people ask, like, what would you do if you weren't playing baseball? I don't know. I really don't know. I never gave myself the opportunity to kind of question that. Yeah. So,
what did you study?
Studied health sciences, and then I kind of migrated into, like, integrative studies, so kind of like a mix of a couple different things. But my focus was wellness and health promotion.
Okay. So, yeah. I was gonna ask, like, if you weren't playing baseball, like, what do you think you would end up doing? But you have, like, you legitimately have no idea. Like,
no,
it was baseball.
It was baseball. And then when that draft and that third, like I said, that third day came and went, and no call. I was like, wow, like, I'm gonna have to start from scratch. Like, yeah. My whole life, I have no idea what to do after this. So, yeah, kind of full circle. It was a really, really low point to now we got a window of opportunity and just ran with it. Yeah.
Outside of baseball, what do you do to unwind? Like, what are your favorite hobbies?
I like to, you know, believe it or not, I read more than people expect. I just like to hang out with friends, honestly. You know, whenever, wherever we're at, if we go, like, different city, get coffee, watch a movie. I want to get more into golf. Okay. I got some clubs. I don't have any idea what I'm doing with the clubs yet, so I think that's going to be a little off-season focus, and golf and fish. That's what I wanted to get more into. I think I could see myself doing.
It's a good thing you're on a team with Brandon Woodruff.
Exactly. Like, yeah, Brandon Woodruff. Petey's. I'm going to take some pointers from Petey. Just a good squad to kind of pick up on some tips and pointers for sure.
Have you played golf on the road at all?
We actually just did on the off day in Pittsburgh, and I was by far the worst.
Who'd you play
the
group with?
Yeah, there was a good. So Ashby was there. Wu was there. There was me, Wu. Who else? Maddie, Erickson, Ash, Jim, Laner was there. There was like seven of us, and like I said, significantly worse than all of the rest, which is not like, that's not something to be proud of by any means. So no, it's like,
that's how I am. How do I get with my friends as I'm wearing the golf right now.
I was like, how do I get
someone's
better?
Someone's got to be the hack out of it, but you do, you can't stay at that.
No.
Plus, as an athlete, that's what you're driven, right? Like, I got to get better if I'm going
to. You got to get better? Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I'm at the point where it's like, I don't golf enough to get mad, but I still, like, when I shank a shot, and it's like, I want to get fierce, but like, I don't practice enough. So there's a balance. You know, you don't practice enough to be good, but at the same time, like, why am I not good? Because I don't practice.
It's in your nature, though. If you hit a ball and you, like, you don't strike it well, you pop it up. Like, it's in your nature.
Yeah,
to get
100%. Yeah.
What are you reading right now? What's your book? What's the Mike Brasso book club?
Right now I'm reading The Obstacle is the Way, and it's kind of a stoic, I guess, mentality book, but it's there's a lot of good... A lot of good stuff in there, actually. It's a book that I can kind of reread. I read a chapter and then I'll go back a couple days later and like pick up something different in the chapter. And so, I like it.
Is that like your main genre of like, do you try to read things that like help you with like your mentality, or do you like also do stuff that's like get you away from, get you outside of baseball?
Yeah, I think the first one. I think it's kind of like self improvement books in a way, but also kind of just to kind of help things, like, put things in perspective in life. It's a crazy world out there, and if there's people that are a lot smarter than me that have written stuff on a book that other people sell, then I think there's value to that, for sure.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
CODA salutes those who've served. Veterans ride free Tuesday, November 11th. And every other day of the year, our veterans and active duty military personnel get a 50% discount on all fares. It's all part of CODA's ongoing commitment to show appreciation for your selfless service. To ride at no cost on fixed routes, tell your bus operator that you're a veteran or use code VET2025 in the app to use CODA Plus. Veterans ride free on Tuesday, November 11th for Veterans Day. Veterans get a 50% discount every day on CODA. Plan your ride and learn more at CODA.com/trip planner.